Hello and welcome to Business Daily from the BBC World Service, the business podcast which brings you the trends, the money and the people who make the world and its money go round. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, I'm Ed Butler. Welcome to Business Daily from the BBC. Coming up, why a left-field market indicator could be a harbinger of doom.
If you do believe in the signal coming from the yield curve right now, what you're really thinking is that this is as good as it gets, and that a world that's got more debt now than ever is going to feel some pain in the future. That's what you're frightened of.
Yep, today's show is all about gazing at the economic omens and whether we should be starting to get scared, or maybe not.
This is my problem, is everyone is forecasting a crash, except me. So I think we are actually at the beginning of a period of remarkable growth, probably the most interesting period of innovation since the Industrial Revolution.
Reading the tea leaves, Business Daily from the BBC. So you may or you may not have noticed this. In fact, you probably haven't. But there is some anxiety on the bond markets these days about a certain curve. A curve on a graph that's threatening to bend the wrong way.
Well, that US yield curve just keeps getting flatter. We're now at levels not seen in about a decade.
What is this? Inverting the yield curve isn't such a huge worry because it's probably a reflection of inflation expectations rather than...
Let me briefly mention the yield curve. I mean, it's the yield curve is something that people are talking about a lot. How do we know where it is and what are the consequences of being above or below it? That's really what, when people are talking about the slope of the
yield. Fed does drives the short end of the curve in terms of the yield and what we see in the coming months.
With the yield curve, but I think we... We'll continue to see a flattening of the yield curve.
Yeah, you wonder why more people don't watch the financial media. Anyway, what they're talking about there, to give it its proper name, is the bond yield curve, a curve that measures the various interest rates you can get for different kinds of US bond market investments. Basically, the curve is flattening out, which is unusual, and it's making some market watchers pretty edgy. Why? What is it? Here's Justin Urquhart-Stewart. He's co-founder of Seven Investment Management to explain.
It is very simply actually a curve which measures the yield or the return you'll get on bonds over a period of time. So it'll be going from, say, 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, 5 years, 10 years. And so therefore what it's telling you is how much that yield, the return you're getting on that bond is, will be over that period of time. And so you can measure, is the yield going up or going down?
And we would expect in a normal economic situation that you get a better yield on a 10-year bond than on a 2-year bond, wouldn't we?
We would normally expect that, as you would with, as you went along to your building site or your bank and said, I'm going to give you my money for 5 years and 10 years, I'd expect to get a better return. But sometimes you can get the opposite occurring, and it actually ends up going down the longer it is. And that's why it's called an inverted yield curve. It's going the wrong way. And people get very interested in that because it normally ends up with some strange events thereafter.
Not just strange, some say. The flattening curve is pretty terrible. In fact, by some experts' reckoning, inverted yield curves have successfully foreshadowed each of America's 7 recessions over the last 50 years. Well, that's what some say anyway. Others rather disagree. The fact is, it hasn't actually fully inverted yet, and like all economic indicators, it may not be totally infallible. Right now, it seems downright implausible to some. The United States is enjoying record low unemployment and record high growth rates for the last decade. So how worried should we actually be? Here's Russ Mould. He's investment director at AJ Bell.
It does give out false signals. No rule is completely infallible. If it was, making money from financial markets would be easy, and it isn't that easy. But I think what the bond market is suggesting is that the Fed will continue to raise rates now, but that in the traditional way, it will overdo it. It will do too much too late, that the US economy will begin to slow down, and that in the future, it will have to recant and start to cut interest rates. And that's really what it's saying. And I think if you do believe in the signal coming from the yield curve right now, what you're really thinking is that the US economy, although it's doing brilliantly now, this is as good as it gets. And that the Trump tax cuts came at the wrong time of the cycle, putting juice into the system when it wasn't needed, with the result that a world that's got more debt now than ever is going to feel some pain in the future. And if you believe the yield curve, that's what you're frightened of.
Right. So basically, the US consumer will start to feel overloaded as those interest rates rise, and the Fed will only notice this after it's too late.
Yeah, not just the US consumer. The consumer is an issue, but I think it's actually corporations. They've taken on a lot more debt since 2007. A lot of it to fund acquisitions, a lot of it to fund share buybacks and dividends, which you could view as a little bit of financial engineering. So I think if you are going to see a squeeze on, I'd actually think it might be there first this time around.
So the United States remains the weak point, potentially, in terms of the global economy.
I think at the moment it's the strongest point. I mean, we've just had some numbers out showing that the US economy is growing at over 4% a year on an annualised basis. But I think you could argue that it's the weakest point because everybody's so convinced it's going to stay that way. And I think when you look at debt being so much higher than it was, inflation is just starting to creep up a little bit. From a strictly investment point of view, you've always got to be at your most nervous when people are at their most confident.
It does seem counterintuitive, though, in a way. You're saying that the economy that's doing best in the world, of the world's developed rich economies, is the one that's the most vulnerable point.
I think it's partly because it's the world's biggest economy, it's the world's biggest stock market, it's the world's biggest bond market, it's home to the world's reserve currency. And I think if the US Federal Reserve does continue to raise interest rates, I know it's not the consensus view. I think that would give potentially a boost to the US dollar. And if things ever do go wrong in the rest of the world, people will flood into the dollar first, so that the dollar going up will be a key feature. That in itself will make US exports less competitive, and it will drain liquidity from the rest of the world. So I'm not too worried about the US economy, but looking at it through the US, just through financial markets, what it means for stocks, what it means for currencies. If the dollar goes up, that's generally a sign that people are worried, and it can actually be a negative sign for financial markets overall.
Russ Mould. Well, we'll look in more detail at some of the specific economic forecasts in just a minute. But first, this talk of inverted curves represents something of an opportunity for us here on Business Daily to look at other traditional indicators used by experts to anticipate imminent change.
There may be trouble ahead, but while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance.
Yes, we all of us start to give off signals, the experts tell us, when times are about to get tough. Take this one example, the sale of lipstick. Apparently, some analysts have spotted that as the economy tanks, sales of lipstick head north. Supposedly, it's one vanity item that consumers still feel they can afford. And here's another telltale sign, the rise of certain specific types of crime. Pet crime, to be precise. Dogs, cats, in fact, all our furry loved ones could be at risk as the economic storm clouds gather. Criminals suddenly realising that this could be their most high-yield and low-risk form of kidnap extortion. Yep, kind of obvious this one. Champagne sales do spike during the good times. Of course they do. And then they nosedive as things get tight. Now, compare that with the rather less intuitive but much vaunted discovery from the realm of fashion. It was back in the 1920s that a US economist first coined the hemline theory, namely that shorter skirts on women were an indication of rising economic confidence. Think the effervescent joy of the 1920s Charleston era, or the miniskirts celebrated in the boom years of the 1960s. Men, meanwhile, also betray their financial expectations through fashion. although rather differently. It was the former Fed chairman Alan Greenspan who apparently first noticed that men buy themselves far fewer underpants at times of economic stress. There you go, that's better. Some things that some experts reckon foretell a crash. Such omens can naturally lead to multi-million dollar swings in public sentiment. But can we trust any of them? Former presidential economic advisor, now corporate investor Pippa Malmgren has written a book about economic signals. She's called it, well, Signals.
Inflation is one. We're absolutely getting inflation now in the official data in most of the industrialized world and definitely across the emerging markets. So you hear a lot of people who are very distressed about quickly rising rents, about rising transportation costs, personal pain caused by a higher cost of living. I'll give you one more that I quite like. I always say fashion and arts are a wonderful place to pay attention to signals because they're so good at capturing zeitgeist. The most popular trend in fashion right now is for transparent, translucent fabrics. Lace, literally see-through fabrics. This is the rage. And I really do think this reflects a societal demand for more transparency. People are literally wearing clothes that reveal more in that effort. That's a signal to me.
That was the great Desmond Morris claim, wasn't it? The psychologist of the 20th century talking about how the rising hemlines or lowering hemlines through the decades would indicate the state of the
economy. And look at the hemlines now. What's popular are the jagged, uneven hemlines. I think the Duchess of Sussex the other day was wearing one of these uneven hemlines. And I'm like, if that isn't hedging your bets, I don't know what. That's I want it both ways. I think we're going to have a good economy and I'm not sure we're going to have a good economy at all. So we'll wear both links.
So, I mean, we're in a world, I mean, we have been, I think, in the last decade, ever since 2008, of everybody spotting bubbles and crashes almost around every corner. Mm. I mean, it has been almost, if there was none of that, and there was almost none of that before 2008, it has been almost nothing but since 2008, right?
Yeah.
That does make signals watching a very dubious, or let's just say a suspicion-inducing craft.
So this is my problem, is everyone is forecasting a crash except me. I feel like I'm in a minority of one yet again in my career. And actually, every time I'm in this position, it works out right. So I'm going to stick with this. So I think it's really interesting. You look at Apple, recently Amazon, these companies are hitting $1 trillion valuations. And I think it's the start of a world where we have many companies at $1 trillion valuations. We are actually at the beginning of a period of remarkable growth, probably the most interesting period of innovation since the Industrial Revolution.
Pippa Malmgren. Anyway, enough of these wider signals. What about that pesky bond yield curve? The chairman of the Federal Reserve has responded to questions recently saying he's not too concerned about it. The flattening curve is happening for technical reasons, he reckons, like huge amount of quantitative easing, cash stimulus in Europe and the US. All of this has affected these long-term yields. I've got two experts, Simon Constable, he's a fellow at Johns Hopkins Institute for Applied Economics, and Justin Urquhart-Stewart, we heard from him earlier. Then we got them to explain all of this.
When something happens in the markets that surprises people, and it's a big difference that they weren't expecting, that's the borrowing costs, then you see the economy decline a bit because of that. Now, since 87, there's been a bit more and increasingly more communication from the Federal Reserve. They've been telling people what they're going to do. They're saying, oh, we're going to do this, you know, in a long time, and then they sort of soften people up for it. So the lack of shock means that it's less useful now, according to this research, and that does seem to make a lot of sense to me.
So basically you're saying that because the bond yield curve has been forecast, because it's a symptom of Federal Reserve behavior and activity in recent months and years, it is less likely to be a reliable indicator of what's about to happen.
Yes, because they're not shocking anybody. It will be like, you know, you're coming around to my house and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to throw a custard pie in your face, and you were ready for that. It wouldn't shock you. You'd be expecting it, and that would be okay. Whereas if I didn't tell you and I just threw it in your face, you'd probably be outraged. You see the difference. When you're expecting something, it doesn't really cause you to even miss a beat.
And shock can cause recessions.
Yes, absolutely.
Justin Urquhart-Stewart, I mean, one of the other issues around this, or perhaps the background issue, is quantitative easing, isn't it? Many people look at the global economy, the way that bonds are behaving, the way that markets are behaving, both in the rich Western markets but also in emerging markets, and they're saying the QE factor has changed the rule book.
The QE factor has been a fundamental issue here. Go back 10 years ago, no one really heard of quantitative easing. Most people couldn't even spell it. Now, actually, what you were then dealing with was central bankers carrying out an experiment. Why? Because we were in the worst financial position we'd ever seen. And so, therefore, they were trying whatever variation of a pill or even custard pie they could find to save not just the markets, but save the economies. Now, quantitative easing has pumped huge amounts of money into the economy. It's pushed up asset prices, be they stocks and shares or various other assets you can get. When you start taking actually this quantitative easing, this support away, that affects the confidence. So that in many ways may be more important than any inverted yield curve, but it will still add another factor to the worries.
Justin Urquhart-Stewart, who along with Simon Constable seems pretty relaxed about the yield curve warning. Not everyone agrees, though. Recent surveys of top market watchers saw almost half of them predicting another US recession over the next couple of years. Many reckon that we are, frankly, due one. Historically, they hit Western economies about every 10 to 12 years, and it's been about that long since the Lehman Brothers crash of 2008. Professor Nouriel Roubini is one of the so-called bears. He's professor of NYU's Stern School of Business, and he's widely credited with forecasting the 2008 financial crisis. He spoke to Bloomberg TV recently.
The ECB decided we're going to finish QE next year. Other central banks in Europe are going to do the same thing. Therefore, global liquidity is going to start to shrink. And once that happens, the dollar is going to strengthen. The current account deficit is going to become higher. And therefore, there'll be an overheating of the economy. And that tighter fiscal policy and tighter monetary policy could plunge the economy into a stall by 2020. If you add the trade frictions, the fact there'll be a slowdown in emerging market, in Europe, in China, and the fact that asset prices, as we know, are frothy. So you might have by 2020 a perfect storm for the US and the global economy.
Yes, you don't. They didn't call him Dr. Doom for nothing. That's Professor Nouriel Roubini there, ending this program's forecasts. Never fear, though, the IMF reckons we are going to see continued global growth above 3% for the next couple of years. So that's all right then, isn't it? Actually, one recent study showed that the IMF's forecasts have consistently been overestimating growth for every single year since the financial crisis. Who can we believe? Anyway, that is it for another Business Daily from me, Ed Butler, and also Fred Astaire. That's it for today's programme. We'll be back tomorrow looking at flying cars. How soon will we see them above our towns and cities? You don't want to miss that programme.
Before they ask us to pay the bills, and while we still have the chance, let's face the music and dance. So while there's moonlight and music and love and romance, let's face the music and dance, dance. Let's face the music and dance.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
The mountains are what keeps me motivated in life.
It's where we get to ask ourselves who we are and who we want to become.
At the turn of this century, five mountaineers set out on individual missions to become the first woman to scale all 14 of the world's 8,000ers. 14 mountains, all above 8,000 meters.
It was about pitting themselves against nature rather than each other.
They knew only one of them would succeed. But whether they liked it or not, it would come to be seen as a race.
Five women vying against each other.
The media needed to find some competition, and they find it.
A race with deadly consequences.
We are just not designed to live in this environment. Getting down alive was my only goal in that situation.
Amazing Sports Stories from the BBC World Service tells their story in Chasing Mountains.
Every step was an achievement.
Search for Amazing Sports Stories wherever you get your BBC podcasts.